Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 736. It's the 17th of March, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Lawrence Cummins, CEO of Nexstar, which is the joint venture Milestone Group have with Black Cactus Group. Milestone, by the way, it's MSG. And Lawrence talks about blockchain technology and its benefits to Milestone Group. I also have, and do you know what? I know of no other person with a bigger, more informed brain than anyone else over both macro and micro issues than Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell. And he covers the following stocks. We talk about macro as well, but he also talks about Stock Spirits, James Latham, and Hummingbird Resources, HUM, ticker there. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Cummins, CEO of Nexstar and Black Cactus, which has a JV with Milestone Group, and that ticker there is MSG. Lawrence, thanks for coming back on.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, now last week we talked and you educated us on the wide range of applications of blockchain outside of its well-known home of finance and the significant difficulties involved in achieving this. And yesterday, Milestone and Nexstar announced that your Alchemy platform is being white labeled for the first time to Apprenticeship for England. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Yes, it is.
Okay, well, let's go through a bit of detail here. So, first and foremost, does this platform incorporate, you know, blockchain technology within it? If it does, how does that improve Alchemy?
Yeah, this is our first platform that we've launched for what I call the giving application. We're working with digital content, music from people like iTunes and Google and various other people, apps, games, books, TV shows, video, movies, and so on. And what happens, it allows someone, the consumer, to go to our site, even though they still have an account, to buy that content, and a proportion of that revenue goes to Apprenticeships for England. But we're using a decentralized network, peer-to-peer. So what happens is we get the payments a lot quicker, and we have speed that allows extremely fast experience for the user to preview, download, and to purchase or to stream. So what we're doing is improving the revenue streams for the Apprenticeships for England and the overall experience. And the consumer has no knowledge of any difference. It just feels the same.
Which is good, I suppose. When someone doesn't know that, you know, that's when it starts working, I suppose. So, you know, as it's such a big deal to develop blockchain, especially outside of the cryptocurrency and finance as a whole, would you say that you were ahead of the curve here with your development on this?
No, absolutely, yes. We are very much ahead of the curve. In some cases, we are probably 2 or 3 years ahead of a lot of the applications that have been developed.
Yeah, yeah.
Our Backstage HD platform is now based on blockchain. We partnered with a company in Switzerland called Ethereum, which is a blockchain foundation. It is, for me, the best development platform we have, and we base everything on that technology.
I understand. And so I'm assuming, you know, how it's quite important, but how important is blockchain to the music industry, especially when you consider, you know, the internet hasn't been that good for music because there's been poor revenues from streaming and there's been piracy issues. So how important is blockchain?
Oh, the blockchain changes the music industry on its head. If you take a look at the music industry from, say, the 1990s, early 2000s, okay, what you had is a lot of companies like Napster that were doing file sharing and so on. And there was no transparency. There was no nothing. The artist wasn't getting paid. So the music industry hated the file sharing. And then comes the streaming services, people like Spotify and Deezer and so on, and Pandora. They hate file sharing, and the music industry hates streaming industry, and there is no transparency. And an artist that puts their content out there, okay, let's say they send sell £1 million worth of digital content, they'll make about £35.
Yeah.
So the artist is the last one that makes any money whatsoever. The music industry hates file sharing. File sharing company hates the streaming services, and there is no transparency.
Yeah.
So what happens today? The artist who uses blockchain will take his music, his lyrics, his body of work, his video, okay, and distribute it on blockchain using smart contracts. He now controls all his work, all his IP, and all his payments, and everything's transparent. Where his music's been listened, where it's been played, and he knows pretty much immediately what his revenues are. And he controls his distribution.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is giving the artist, or the small label, control back again of their IP.
Yeah, and I suppose it cuts out, obviously, you know, having this control cuts out the middlemen and stops them taking their cut and everyone else taking the cut in between. So it's very important there.
Yeah,
so
think of the middlemen as what we call in the blockchain industry trusted sources, like you have in banking. You know, a bank is a trusted source and an accountant's a trusted source. In this case, the music label would be a trusted source, okay? And the trusted source are the middlemen. And so what's happening, we're removing all that layer of middlemen and allowing the artist to go directly to the consumer and control his IP and monitor everything that's happening with his contract and get paid virtually immediately. So not having to wait 6 months, if iTunes 90 days, maybe 6 months, a year from PRS and all this stuff. He gets paid almost in 24 to 72 hours of something happening.
Okay.
And he doesn't have to share it with a trusted source. If he does a concert or he does an event, he doesn't need to go to those distributors anymore. He can actually work directly with local promoters and so on to promote his content and receive the revenues of that concert almost immediately.
I see. Okay, and so now, apart from revenues then, what is the benefit to Milestone and Nexstar here?
Well, Milestone, Nexstar, on my side, Nexstar is a technology company. Our whole premise is based upon blockchain. Whatever we do, it's a blockchain base. Our goal is to be the leader in music and fintech distribution applications around blockchain. And we are probably 2 to 3 years ahead of most other developments. Why? Because we're a small team that have the ability to act quickly and have a tremendous understanding and knowledge and skill sets about how blockchain works and how to deploy those applications.
Yeah.
We see it as a tremendous advantage in the marketplace.
Yeah, yeah. And generally, I mean, do you see over the next year or so, couple of years, blockchain really, you know, becoming mainstream?
Absolutely. Blockchain is the future. Just like when the early web came out, it was very crude and primitive, and people were able to do things and, you know, search and buy tickets and do things and watch movies, but it's very primitive. Today, people use the web, and it's basically an online source of everything. Now, the reality is that was based on a technology called SQL. The new future of the World Wide Web will be blockchain. Blockchain will be used everywhere. It'll be used for trading. It'll be used for moving documents around. It'll be used for email. It'll be used for absolutely everything. No one will know about it. It's called the Internet of Everything. And blockchain, for me, is the fundamental building block of that. And as far as the user or the consumer is concerned, he's just transacting, doing his daily life as normally happens, except what it does, it gives more control and transparency to everything that's going on in the web.
Yeah, marvellous. Lawrence, thanks so much for speaking to us, and hopefully speak again soon. Thank you.
It was enjoyable. Thank you very much. I look forward to hearing you again. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. Are you all right, Russ? How's things for you this week?
I'm very well. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, Justin.
Yes, you too. And, you know, with the FTSE hitting all-time highs, everything's right, the sun is shining. What can possibly go wrong here, Russ?
Well, my bets in the Cheltenham Gold Cup would be one thing for starters, but well, that's a separate issue altogether. That's not, of course, investing. That is gambling, and they're very different, in case anybody thinks I'm conflating the two and I get myself in trouble if they are.
Yeah, this is that guy I was thinking, insane, who lost $500,000 on the favourite the other day, and I was thinking, is he nuts? He'd be better off, you know, putting five chunks of 100,000 into risky AIM stocks, and he'd have
a lot more success. If he's got the 500 grand, he doesn't need the 100 he was trying to win, really, does he? I don't think he's got risk and reward in the right perspective there.
Insane, yes. I was just talking to you just before we hit the record here about what your weekend consists of, and you were saying you're doing a speech to, what, fifth and sixth formers or something about the stock market?
I'm going over to some friends in Norfolk, and the lady's a teacher, and I'm doing a presentation to fifth and sixth formers on how the stock market works for an hour at 6 o'clock this evening, so I admire the kids' fortitude.
I think I can do that. How does it work?
It's not going to be a monologue. I'm just going to look at particularly the issue of, you know, the agency issue of who do companies work for? Is it for the capital providers, the providers of labour, or the management team? And look into that a little bit more, and just look at how investing can be a means of getting rich slowly, or at least protecting your wealth from the ravages of inflation, if it's used properly and if things go well. But I can't just stand there and speak for an hour. I'll bore them to tears, particularly on a Friday night. So I've got a few videos embedded in there. I've got Liza Minnelli singing Money the World Makes the World Go Round, the old Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy piece about using leaves as currency in hyperinflation, Gordon Gekko's Greed is Good speech, and then just to round it off and liven things up, I've got the video trailer from the Wolf on Wall Street movie.
Nice. That sounds good. Do you know what? The reason why I got in the stock market is my A-level economics teacher set up little teams, and we did a sort of fancy league share thing, you know?
There you go.
And it really got me into it, and really inspired me, and I love that. I think there's a lack of that. And we're taught all different kinds of things in school that are completely irrelevant, you know? Almost highfalutin mathematics. You'll never need it, but you're not told about basic things. About, I don't know if they are now, but about mortgages and, you know, investments and all this kind of stuff. And I think that's, you know, missing. And it's an exciting world. And a lot of the people we hear, you know, talking about stock market, you see on telly or something, are quite boring sort of economists. And I think it's quite exciting parts of it. Shares are exciting, you know? And there we are. So I like talking about inflation. We did have this sort of the MPC committee come out, and sort of nine members on there. One member who's leaving, Kristen Forbes, she voted to raise them. I think, and I said this on an earlier podcast today, I think she's correct, because we're now getting sort of data, solid data coming out, showing that it is inflationary pressure happening. And so she said, it's always a lag factor, we know this kind of thing. And yet, no one else voted to raise them. And it, Mark Carney, after Brexit, knee-jerk reaction, no solid data, basically on sentiment and surveys, lowering interest rates. I think, what data do you need?
I mean, it's fascinating, because the US Federal Reserve has now pushed through three interest rate increases, albeit in very baby steps. The Bank of England seems to be showing no inclination to move at all. Unemployment is the same on both sides of the pond at 4.7%, but wage growth's running a bit quicker in the US, which I think is where the Bank of England's really focusing, and inflation's running a bit quicker in the US. I guess the issue on inflation is, to what degree is that inflation we're getting the result of the oil price going up? It's up around 50% year on year. If oil stays where it is at around $50 a barrel, by the fourth quarter of this year, that effect will drop out, and inflation mathematically could end up going back below 1% quite quickly. Okay. So I guess that's what the Bank of England are looking at. Equally, there is clearly a concern in the States that central bank, that the Fed is behind the curve and is moving too slowly, given that wage growth is accelerating. There's clearly a concern about that in the UK as well. And that's why lots of people have been all over things like index-linked bonds, because they do believe that at some stage, a very long period of low interest rates, a very long period of QE will inevitably lead to inflation. The counter argument to that, and I think this is one of the reasons that maybe Mr. Carney again is going slowly in the UK, is consumer credit has reached record debt levels. The government is still, you know, has got record debt levels on an aggregate basis. So the elephant in the room, debt, has not gone away. Equally, there'll be lots of Austrian economists particularly who've been arguing that in fact QE and record low interest rates have been part of the problem, not part of the solution. And I don't know whether Christine Forbes is an Austrian economist by training or not. I won't put words into her mouth. But you've had a lot of people arguing that because you're getting money so cheap, you know, returns on money are so poor, it's been creating distortions in the market, whereby people have actually been, people who need income, like insurance companies, have actually been buying more bonds than they would do normally just because they're so desperate for their income. So actually, if interest rates go up and bond yields go up, they won't need to allocate so much capital to that, and that will actually free up money for investment or other things elsewhere. So Austrians would actually argue that low rates and low QE have been the problem, and that therefore will be intrigued to see what happens if interest rates start going up. But in the UK, at least, I'm not holding my breath. In America, what's fascinating is the Fed has clearly laid out its stall now for two more rate rises of a quarter point this year and three next year. There is an old market phrase, three steps and a stumble. If you look historically, the third interest rate increase of a Fed up cycle, the market's then generally gone sideways on average for about a year afterwards. I stress on average, there's a wide range over eight tightening cycles since 1970 there. But what you then find normally is, providing the US economy stays healthy and accelerates, and that's in the end where the Fed should be doing this in the first place, the market then recaptures momentum. So that's probably not too much to worry about yet. The biggie is how much, therefore, is too much rate rise wise. So I've looked at every major S&P peak since 1970, and there's about eight of them again. And what I found is that it's been between seven and eight rate rises that have, generally speaking, started to put the proper stops on the S&P 500. Now, lots of other things have been going on as well, but from a rate rise perspective, it's been between seven and eight. And if you get two more this year and three next year, the last one next year will be the eighth. So let's see what happens in 2018.
Interesting. I love those kind of stats. Okay, let's move on to stocks. From stats to stocks. Three stocks you've highlighted this week. So the first one, it's called Stock Spirits.
Yes. It is Stock Spirits. It's a maker of, as the name rather suggests, vodka, rum, brandy, and other exciting things. Not that I'm a big spirits drinker myself. It predominantly features, specializes in the in the Eastern European markets. It's actually a Polish company by extraction. And what's fascinating here is that you had a company that had a very successful flotation in 2013 and at 235p. The shares then went all the way down to a pound after a massive hangover caused by a string of profit warnings in 2014 and 15, largely because the company jacked up its prices and then lost market share in its core Polish market. Got a new chief executive in 2016, four new non-executive directors, a big overhaul of its Polish operations, and the shares have begun to respond to that. Results came out on the 8th of March, which were okay. Sales were flat. Operating profit was flat. Pre-tax profit was up quite strong because of the absence of a write-down on some financial charges, and the dividend was up a little bit as well. The net debt figure is very low. It's very strongly financed. But a major shareholder, a Portuguese businessman called Luis Amaral from a company called Westerngate Investments, he's got about 10% of the stock, said, "I'm not happy with this. It's not turning around quickly enough. The cost-cutting program is not doing it for me." And I think his big bone of contention here is the company has its headquarters in High Wycombe. And he's been hassling them to move that to Warsaw, because it's cheaper, and that's where the company does all of its most of its business. And the board said it didn't really think that that was appropriate. So I think you've got an interesting situation whereby you've got a company that makes 15% operating margins, has got good local brands, has been through a bit of a problem, is now looking to tackle that problem, and yet you've also got a pretty active investor on the register who's clearly going to keep on rattling their cage. So that might just press the company into doing more than it's done previously. It's on about 15 times earnings, a 3.5% dividend yield. So for a relatively defensive stock, it's not bad. I mean, Diageo trades on 22 times earnings, but then it's got operating margins that are broadly, you know, double what Stock Spirits have got, I guess because it's things like Captain Morgan and are just much better known brands than the Stock Spirits one, and are much more global. But I think it does show that there's a big operating margin difference there, so there is potential. If they can get the Polish situation buzzing, and if Mr. Amaral gets his way, you do get the feeling there could be more profit squeezed out of the company than it's currently making. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, I like the fact that a big shareholder did a bone of contention with High Wycombe. He says, High Wycombe equals high wages. And so, yeah, that exotic capital of the world. Yeah, okay, let's go to Warsaw. Brilliant, so that's our stock. So the next one is what, Russ?
James Latham. It's a timber merchant. So yeah. And it provides paneling and timber. So you can argue, and in some ways, it's nothing fancy. But I must say, it now does a very wide range of hardwoods and softwoods, areas where my lady wife is an expert, and I'm largely fairly ignorant. But one of the interesting things here is it's got a net cash balance sheet, a really well covered dividend. Okay, the yield isn't massive at barely 2%, but it's very comfortably covered, and you've got a very solid business. And I think they just had some very good news flow from the industry in general on the builders merchant side. Marshalls, the paving stone business, was very bullish the other week. Grafton, equally so. And so I think, you know, given we've had some good numbers from Barclay Homes today, it does seem as if the UK economy on the building side is still ticking over very nicely. Latham's well positioned there. It's a as the name says, I mean, Mr. Latham is the chairman of the board, as you can guess. It's a company with a strong family history. The family still own about 15% of the stock, so they're not going to do anything daft or bet the farm or jeopardize that very fine tradition. So I think in that respect, well-run business. The multiple looks pretty full at around 18 times forward earnings, but earnings momentum right now feels okay. If there is a question to answer, it's the one about the weaker pound. They import a lot of their product, and that could create some margin pressure in 2017, unless, of course, they manage to squidge some price increases through. So even if you're not interested in the stock, and you've got exposure to other building or infrastructure type players, do keep an eye on what James Latham is saying. There are signs of incipient price pressure building up in the construction chain, which, going back to our first conversation about UK inflation, is going to have even wider implications still, potentially. So even if you're not particularly interested in this 160 million cap stock, do keep an eye on it, because what they say about pricing will be potentially very informative on a bigger sector and indeed a bigger national basis. So it's all eyes down now for the trading statement on the 6th of March that read very well. Pre-tax coming in a little bit better than expected. All eyes now for the full year figures on the 22nd of June.
Yeah, and it's had a little bit of a sell-off, hasn't it? From 920 down to 820. So, you know, you could look about, sort of, you know, maybe it's finding a support level here somewhere, because it's hitting the 50-day moving average here. So,
I think that's the issue with the margin pressure that management flagged. So let's see what happens over the next few months.
Marvellous. Okay, and the last stock, which I know a little bit about. I mean, I think about a year back, I did invest in these. Hummingbird Resources.
Yes, it's a gold miner, and I flagged it just because, again, after our little macro chat at the start there, the gold price actually popped on the back of the Federal Reserve announcement, whereby some people have been frightened the Fed would increase more quickly than 3 rate rises this year. They seem to have backed away from that. Now, gold, some investors will love it, some investors will hate it. Ne'er the twain shall meet. So if you're not into gold, this stock definitely isn't going to be of any interest to you at all. Mm-hmm. If you don't like companies that aren't generating revenues, let alone profits, you're not going to like this one at all. So it's very much high octane, high risk. You've got to love gold, you've got to love risk. And if you don't like either, look away now. Yeah. But the story on this 90 million cap stock is it's got a gold mine in Mali, Yanfolila, a management which is, they're looking to get into production at the end of 2017 with commercial production in early 2018. There's then a satellite site related to that called Gonka. And the key really is that management are pretty confident that their all-in cost is less than $700 an ounce. Mm-hmm. So with gold at around $1,235 an ounce right now, that clearly gives them a lot of room for profit margin, even if the gold price wobbles again. So, but clearly a lot of things have got to fall into place. They've got to execute on the mine. You don't want to see the gold price going down. And then you've got to start seeing them, you know, making sure that they can stick to their cost targets. So again, it is lots of ifs, ands, buts, and maybe. So you've got to be very, very confident in this one. And if you're of any way risk averse, it probably isn't for you. But it's the sort of stock that gold bugs will like, particularly as you clearly get huge operational leverage into any upside in the gold price, particularly on the senior miners like Polymetal or Randgold are heavily geared into the gold price, but you get massive upside from these smaller microcap stocks if things go according to plan and the gold price stays firm. I think in the end, for gold to really go nuts, it's sell from $1,235, you probably actually need to see central banks saying, ooh, I'm really sorry, there's too much debt in the system, to go back to our early conversation. We're gonna just can the rate rise cycle from here. And I think gold, people like it as an inflation hedge because it's very hard to find, very expensive to produce. Supply doesn't grow quickly relative to electronic money. But I think you'll find that gold does really particularly well when people think that central banks are not in control of the situation and when they're really hitting the print button. I think we're a way away from that yet. But there are a few people out there who do think that the global indebtedness problem is so big that is still a potential endgame. And if that was the case, then you would expect gold to really do incredibly well.
Yeah, and I'm going to say, you know, when you're looking for gold producers or producers about to produce anyway, it's always good to look at the cost of production there. If they are way above, you know, way below where the actual price of gold is, always a good thing. And on the chart here, always good to look at a chart, you know, because it's tried to break 28 pence twice this, and it's failed. And you'd think now, if it successfully breaks that and stays above that and closes above that, then maybe it's going to re-rate and go forward further north. But at the moment, it's having problems. It's going below 28 and 28 pence. So check out the chart there. And yes, a good little pick, I think, because I've met the guys there, and they're nice guys. And I've had one of the guys on the podcast, actually. And having said that, because they're nice guys, doesn't mean the share price will go north.
I'm afraid not, unfortunately. I wish it did, but unfortunately not always now.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Russ, speak next week. Have a nice weekend.
I look forward to it. Take care, Justin. Bye-bye now.
All right, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, it's 88 Energy. That's ADD. It's there again. At four, Andalas Energy, ADL. At three, it's there again. URU Metals, ticker URU. At two, AMA Minerals, AMC. At number one, it is the most followed company on Vox Markets of all time, and in the last 24 hours too. Probably helped a little bit by Collins' question-answer session on the podcast yesterday, in which he did, fair play, an exhaustive, in-depth chat there and answering of questions from private investors. Ascent Resources, AST, is there at the top of the list again. No stranger to that position. In fact, it's very good friends with it, and they go out drinking regularly. All right, here's the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning, or last 24 hours, by the way. At five, Horizonte Minerals, final results, and some good numbers there. They are cash flow positive at today's nickel prices, which is not far off multi-year lows. That's impressive. They have cash at the end of December of $9.3 million, enough to take it through the feasibility study at the end of this year, and they've just started doing that, which is very good. At four, Rose Petroleum, ROSE, Mexican IVA recovery update, and they're getting money from... I did read about that when my money slipped, but they're getting money back that they're owed, basically. At three, Asia Met Resources, ARS, Asia Met Investor Presentation Evening, and exhibition details for the UK Investor Show. At two, Premier African Minerals, PREM, RHA update, XRT installation complete. And number one, the most liked RNS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was from Management Resource Solutions. Ticker there is Mrs. And that was Directorate Changes. So people like that. The Murray has resigned there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry in to the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.